This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. On this inauguration day in Washington, and this first week of classes for the new semester on our campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, we speak with Dr. Yancey Freeman. He is UTC's Vice Chancellor for Enrollment Management and Student Affairs. We talked about how UTC is moving forward during this stage of the pandemic, and a campus-wide call for hope and reconciliation after recent events near and far in the past few weeks. Dr. Freeman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here with you and exciting to spend some time with you this afternoon.
And we have a lot to talk about because we are at the start of another semester here at UTC.
Yes, we are. It is the start of the spring 21 semester. And with all semesters, as you can imagine, it is exciting because we have at least our residential students back. And so it's always exciting to have students on campus. They bring a, you know, vibrancy to campus that is unlike any other place, I think, in the world. But also, we are still dealing with COVID-19 and trying to mitigate the spread of that virus as well. So it is challenging as well as exciting.
And we should remind listeners beyond campus about how the university is operating at this time and what that means for students, for faculty, for staff.
Yeah, so in terms of how we're operating, this past fall, we had fewer face-to-face courses and we're learning more. And as we understand more about the virus, we are continuing to change what we do around campus. And so we have fewer face-to-face courses in the fall. We do have more face-to-face courses in the spring for students. And when I say face-to-face, it might not mean they're meeting every day, but it might be in a hybrid format or some format where they are meeting once a week or every other week or something. And so we have more courses that are face-to-face in the spring, which we understand and know that students have been requesting it. They want it more face-to-face. We're a campus that's built to do face-to-face really well in terms of our premise. And so we have some online courses for students who want to take that option, some face-to-face courses for students who want to do that. But anything that is meeting face-to-face is done with university protocol around social distancing in the classroom. So making sure that the seats are 6 feet or more apart. And also there is a mask mandate on campus where students, faculty, and staff must wear a mask when they are on campus. And so those two things are in place. Lots of hand sanitizer around, you know, for folks to continue to stay clean and safe. And lots of reminders about making sure that you wash your hands and continue to do what is required so that we can mitigate the spread.
What's a lesson or two that you, the chancellor, the rest of the campus administration learned from navigating this pandemic last semester that you are trying to carry forward into this semester for students, for faculty, for staff?
Yeah, it's been interesting. And before I answer that question, I would love to be able to just say to you and the listeners that I couldn't see myself working any other place. The faculty, staff, and students at this university are absolutely phenomenal. And what they do around rallying for a call for volunteers or what happens to make what we do go is just a phenomenal experience overall, where folks are willing and able and they sort of rally around each other to make sure that we are safe. And so I am so pleased to be working here and for the team of folks who are at UTC. I think I really underestimated the value of the face-to-face nature that's there around the institution, right? That, you know, one of the things we've had to deal with on our campus in a more prominent way are some of the mental health issues that come from folks not having the chance to be with other people, if that makes sense. And so it's been tough for some folks. If you are a type A personality like me who gets energy from being around people and engaging with people, then in a COVID-19 world where you're supposed to social distance and not be in groups, it's tough. And so we have, you know, done some things around providing more mental health care for students, faculty, and staff who are on campus to talk about how you navigate this world. And some good things have come from this as well. We've been doing some telehealth appointments where students now don't have to come into University Health Services. They can receive service over the telephone. We've done some telecounseling appointments for students that we will continue once post-COVID-19 gets here. We're going to continue to offer those sorts of services because we can now very easily see that those things work and students are interested in using them. And so we'll continue to use those services and offer them.
And as far as how this semester unfolds, we are just taking things a step at a time, a day at a time, a week at a time, a month at a time.
Yeah, right now we have suspended a number of face-to-face courses. We have some face-to-face essential courses, and typically those are lab courses, studio courses in many situations that are meeting face-to-face, meaning that it is an essential component that they do so in order for learning to continue. And so we have some essential face-to-face courses that are meeting, but the vast majority of the face-to-face courses for the spring semester have been delayed until February 1st. That's the next time we intend to offer face-to-face where students will come to class and come to the classrooms. They are enrolled in classes virtually, and so they're enrolled in classes virtually right now. We anticipate, we hope, we desire, if we can see the peak that was happening at the beginning of the year continue to decrease, then we hope that we're going to be able to safely come back and do face-to-face courses at that February 1 time for students to reengage.
I want to shift to hope and reconciliation, a message that you and Dr. Hale, the provost, shared with campus just the other day.
Right.
Share more of that with our listeners, the spirit of that with our listeners, and why it's important to express that message of hope and reconciliation now.
Yeah, I think what has occurred in our country, and I shared some of this in the email to campus, I think what has occurred in our country and even on our campus with one of the former assistant football coaches sent a tweet that really had some people upset, very upset by the content of what was there. What happened at the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C., those things are things that we have not seen, not experienced at all. And as the chief student affairs officer, as the chief enrollment person, as the chief academic officer, Dr. Hale and I wanted to make sure that folks knew that the university is a place where you can have conversation about various topics, in particular current events that are happening and how folks feel about those current events. But we want to do that with civility and collegiality as we go forward. And the only way to get beyond this is to really have a spirit, a pathway of hope and reconciliation. I am one who believes that though we may look different or may come from different places, people have more things in common than they would care to know or share or to think about. It really does take an opportunity for folks to get in a discussion and start talking about what you believe and why you believe it and how you prove and document what you believe around whatever it might be. And so for me, and as I don't want to speak for the provost because he's not on the call with us, but for me, this call for hope and reconciliation is one that allows us to learn from this experience so that hopefully we do not repeat it. And then the university provides a safe space for that learning to take place.
And these recent events are just another example of the particular challenge that institutions of higher education face when we talk about aiming for a path of hope and reconciliation, when we talk about the freedom to express diverse ideas, but express them with civility.
Right. Right. The wonderful thing about a higher ed institution, it doesn't operate in a vacuum, right? We are not isolated from the entire world. We have free thinking people who have the right to express their views, and we want to respect those views on our campus, but we do want to do it in such a way that allows everyone's voice to be heard in a way, you know, through civility and collegiality, as I see it. And so, providing chances to do that on the campus is what we think is the ultimate goal of learning and builds character. And it really does, in many ways, point to the experience that students have on campus when they have a chance to learn from each other. That's why they're here, is to learn about those different experiences and to have a chance to engage with people who are different than them.
What are some of the opportunities that students will see from the campus in the coming days and coming weeks about this theme of hope and reconciliation?
Sure. Yeah. We have our Student Government Association. I am so proud of this group of student leaders who are elected by their peers. Our Student Government Association is sponsoring a conference called You See Me, and it's an acronym. And I am not going to try to name the words within the acronym because I am not going to get it correct. But it's an acronym about hope and reconciliation. It is about empowerment for students. And so faculty are encouraging students to participate in this conference. The conference dates will begin next week. And so students will begin to receive invitations there and have a chance to engage with other students in this dialogue around differences and how we get to this common ground. And so you'll see that coming very soon. We also have a team called BEST, it's Bias Education and Support Team. They are going to do a number of, and we're calling them mock talk sessions with some of the affinity groups across campus to talk with them about their sentiment, any anxiety they might be having from current events that are happening out there, to talk about resources and how we as an institution can provide those resources, and also talk about how we can help folks with learning to communicate in a civil way, you know, in a collegial way through this. So those are coming up very, very soon. Some of them as early as next week.
What are some of the things that you have been hearing again and again from different corners of the campus community about this message?
It has been just overwhelmingly positive. It is probably no big secret that this is also coming after ML King Day, Dr. Martin Luther King Day, and he was the great minister of hope and reconciliation. And although it may seem coincidental, it is no coincidence at all. I think that this is all sort of aligning in this way that it comes around the holiday for him. It is just imperative, I think, that we are able to communicate openly with individuals across the campus. And I've said to folks that even when we disagree, we have to agree to disagree on some things. That's okay. But giving everyone the chance to have their voice heard is what is absolutely important. And listening with an empathic ear is what is absolutely important. And so if we can do, in some situations, more listening than talking, then it gives us a chance to understand each other and be able to move forward. And I'm thrilled to be in a situation in this role where we can provide those chances for folks across the campus to talk about what they're feeling and why and how we move forward as a campus.
And if members of the campus community are listening to us and they want more information about what's coming, about these opportunities that are coming, where can they go online?
Yeah, we are working right now on posting information out on UTC's website. That's www.utc.edu. And I am working with our folks in marketing and communications to put something right on the front page for these events. So hopefully you'll see something very soon and they can just go there and find out all the details and try to join us as they need to.
All right. Dr. Freeman, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. I appreciate you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots Talking Writing. Our guest is Mark Anderson. Mark has been a member of the Chattanooga Writers Guild for more than 4 years. And for the past 2 years, he has been the president.
What does that mean to be president of the Writers Guild? What does that entail? Is that a big responsibility?
Oh, I wish. It's the buck stops here. I found out why they go through nonprofit organizations, volunteer organizations will always have a problem, you know, keeping the volunteers on board. But whatever doesn't get done, I do. And when currently I've been doing the website and just edited our anthology and do a lot of, mostly it's a lot of administrative stuff, just heavily, a lot of emails and administrative things.
What do you need volunteers for? What do volunteers typically do for the Writers Guild?
Well, when we were meeting in person, we have set up for the events. We need people to help with publicity. We need good group leaders. We thrive on our writing groups. So we have about 8 current writing groups. So we always need a new leader of one of those. If you're already part a member of the guild, and then you say, yeah, I can lead a poetry group or a fiction group or something.
Gotcha. So you divide it into 8 different ways of expression, poetry or prose or fiction, nonfiction, I guess, like that?
Well, our main genres are just 3, the poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. But we just started a kids lit group that Kate Landers is leading. And I've just started one, going to use the book Tell It Slant, a nonfiction writing guidebook. And we just meet once a month. But we always need people to step up for those things. And then as we have presentation opportunities, editing opportunities.
All of which is, as with virtually everything in our lives, I suppose, been completely upended by COVID. So much of the brief of the Writers Guild, it seems to me, is social. It's about bringing people together, bringing audiences together with writers, bringing writers together with one another, all of which is considerably more complicated for you and has been for, I guess, almost your entire term as the president, huh?
Well, writers can be very insulary. You think of the writer writing alone off somewhere, and that can be very true. You don't write with someone else in the room necessarily, but we believe that writers write better in community, and we love our friends who are also writers, the kindred spirit, the creative spirit. So we are a community of writers. We range from novice to advanced and really credentialed. I'm a novice writer. It's funny that I got to be president without being a wonderful writer. I kind of got in for administrative skills or event planning things. But I'm an aspiring novice writer and hopefully getting better, and I'm certainly get a lot from being with other writers.
On Scenic Roots, this is Talking Writing. Our guest, Mark Anderson, is the current president of the Chattanooga Writers Guild. He's also a poet.
This poem called We. When your people are my people, then I will grieve, moan, and wail through the night. When they are jailed, oppressed, abused, or killed, the pain will not be your pain, but our pain. On that day, when your people are my people, when the voice of your people is muted by the voice of the mighty majority, so loud that small voices are only whispers, then your voice will become my voice on that day when your people are my people. If your people are bound in a bottomless pit with jobs leading only to perpetual poverty, I will not turn away content that I got mine. I will not ignore your plight on that day when your people are my people. If sick, wounded, or suffering, I will not turn away saying, oh well, another day. Your disease and afflictions we will share on that day when your people are my people. When injustice comes upon you, then I will not ignore, hide, or turn my face away. I will rise up and take a stand with you on that day when your people are my people. On that day when your people are my people, there will be no more us and them. And no more them and us, but only we.
Did a particular event inspire you to write that?
I wrote that during the summer, during the racial tensions. And I heard a person talking about my people. I realized that it's easy to ignore the pain of other people as long as it's those other people. In society, when we make a shift and we say, no, those aren't those other people. They are my people, too. That's, I think, the cultural shift we need. And I'd like to think that as a writer, I'd like to live by the motto that writers are world changers. History proves that. And I just hope that the little things I write will be part of that healing process.
It's a nice idea, isn't it? Let's hope.
It's a dreamer. Yeah, dreamer.
Well, I think whatever you write is almost certainly going to impact somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, if one person reads this poem and is moved, And then the knock-on effect of that, it's hard to say how many people you've actually influenced with your poem, you know, but and that's assuming that only one person is moved by it, which my instinct says a lot of people exposed to that poem would be moved by that.
Thanks.
That idea, you know.
Well,
I mean, that's what it all comes down to in the end, isn't it?
Yes.
Our common humanity.
Absolutely. And there's so much tension in America right now. It is just, writers have got a lot of work to do, a lot to write about.
I know exactly what you mean. It's the curse to some degree, I suppose, of any writer's life, that you are most inspired at times when you're most uncomfortable.
My writing all comes out of, my best writing comes out of some internal angst, something that's really bothering me, and then it's a form of catharsis for me. It's expressing something in there that's like, and it's part of the answer to what's bothering me. Like, I can have this horrible relationship problem that'll bother me for a long time. Suddenly, as I process in my mind, I'll express it, and I say, that's the answer I was looking for, right there. So there's a lot of writers that, you know, they write to a prompt, or they do their routine, writing so many words a day and stuff, and that's okay for a lot of people, but I think there's also really valid that just says, you know, when you're ready to write something, then write it and don't force it.
Do you find it helpful to workshop your work? I'm sure you, since you have so many different groups under the Writers Guild, that you probably take advantage of that a little bit, don't you?
Absolutely. This was workshopped. And it probably as I was reading it today, I'm thinking, maybe I could find that, tune that word there a little bit. But yeah, we have a group with, it's called Creative Nonfiction and Poetry. We meet once a month and we bring our things and we get some really helpful comments from the other writers.
Most writers would say, you know, you benefit enormously from a good editor, whoever that might be, you know, whether we're talking somebody who's does it for a living or somebody who's just willing to read your work and give you feedback on it. And if they're writers themselves, then maybe they can offer insights that somebody who's not a writer wouldn't think to offer. You know?
Right.
Is that true?
Well, it's when I write something, I have my perspective, and it's really important to hear what the audience, they'll say, what did you mean by that? I was misspelling the word crisis. And Sherry Poff says, did you mean plural crisis or one? And I thought, and so it was, crisis is spelt with a IS, one, but if you spell it with ES, that means plural for crisis. And I'm like, how did I not get that? So it can be simple things like that, but mostly it's finding that third person audience person who gives you their perspective.
So given that that's how you operate, how are you operating? Given that you can't meet face to face, as it's still possible to do much of what you do, even though you can't be in the same room with each other, isn't it? Because of Zoom and these other technologies.
Well, for years we met at the city library every second Tuesday of the month for a long, long time. And of course that shut down last March, and we put our minds to being creative. I mean, our board meetings were like, okay, we're creative spirits, let's start rethinking about this. So I started recording interviews, and none of us had heard of Zoom a year ago, and we got a good Zoom account. And I would get a group of writers, usually one of these groups, and get them all on Zoom, and then we'd talk for 45 minutes about the group and writing. So it'd just be like your writers in the round.
Mm-hmm.
Recorded on Zoom, and then we show that as a Facebook watch party, and we put it on our website. And that's fun because it's our group members being interviewed, and so we're getting to know each other. that way.
And now you're looking to do the same thing here at the university?
Yeah, well, we have several writing groups as part of the guild, and we always need to add more, and we need leaders for those. But here at UTC, we'd love to get another one. We need some student leaders to be part of that. So watch for an announcement in the English department coming up soon. We have a professor that'll be the sponsor of that.
How does that work? As leaders, what are they expected to do?
Well, the UTC has an application. They say, well, you got to have 4 students on your application. So I need 4 names that says that they'll be part of it.
And then anybody else who wants to join after that?
Yeah.
Just expands that core.
And then if they meet with me or someone else who's on the board, we'll meet with them and sort of form that relationship, partnership. And say they want to have a open mic once a month or a poetry night, something like that. Then it makes a lot of fun for student writers to collaborate and meet kindred spirits and get together and do that stuff.
And it seems like a no-brainer that the university and the Writers Guild will be affiliated.
We've been long-term affiliated. In fact, when we began in 2001, our first members were students here. And
are they still members?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a pretty long relationship.
Yeah.
20 years.
Yep. Going on 20 years. Then we've gone to, we have open mics at least once a month, which we also do on Zoom, and which are fairly small, but very, it's just wonderful to get together for a couple hours in the evening and with your friends, writers, and in a casual setting and share what you've been writing about. We decided to do, typically we have one contest a year, annual spring writers contest, but we started doing a monthly one. So this is all online. People just write and submit, and they get a small cash award. They get published on our website. And recently we started an arrangement with the Pulse magazine, thanks to Gary Poole, where they're going to publish our... They've done creative writing in the past. It's not something totally new to them, but they says, yeah, we'll put your winning features articles in there. So that is awesome, and we hope that continues. So I think what's happened, where we had been dependent on one meeting, that's monthly meeting, it forced me as a president to look at our organization, say, what are our real strengths? Who are we really? And really focused on community the last 10 months. And I think it's bearing out. It's being very, it's helped us to refocus in good ways.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. It struck me when you were talking before that in some ways you've taken a negative and turned it into a positive. That while people aren't able to do open mics or to come together in the conventional way, by doing it the way you're doing it, it opens it up to potentially a huge audience by putting things online, because there's no telling who can see it. And it also gives people access who, for any number of reasons, might have trouble if it had to be face-to-face.
Now, we've got an event coming up Saturday, January 23rd, which is the first one of these we've done. It's a workshop. So typically every January we do a winter writer's workshop. We do it as a day-long event. We've been doing it over at Chat State. And usually we have 3 main speakers and 3 additional, so like, and we have sessions. It just goes all day. Mm-hmm. And we have really good speakers every year, usually UTC faculty. What are we going to do this year? So we're going to still do a workshop, but it's one speaker instead of 3, and it's going to be John C. Manone, and he's a retired physics professor. He's going to present a workshop called The Intersection of Science and Art, focusing on literary arts. So we're going to do it on Zoom, and we're just going to meet, I think we start at 11 for an hour. So he's going to do a presentation for an hour. Then we eat lunch together at Zoom. So you just sit there in front of your screen and chat and talk. And then we take an hour break to write, and then we reconvene. So registration for that is available on our website, ChattanoogaWritersGuild.org. I was in our newsletter too, but that's the best way to find out about it, ChattanoogaWritersGuild.org. There's a registration link there, and there's a small fee. It's a discounted for members, and it's a little higher fee for non-members. It should be a real good quality experience there to hang out with some writers, and John is an incredible poet, very brilliant. That's the other thing about being in this organization. I found myself surrounded by brilliant people, and I'm like always amazed at the intellectual capacity of some of the other writers. They're like, their brains can take Ray Zimmerman, I'm always with, brilliant guy, John, Kate. I always feel like I'm just kind of this, like, okay, I get by. And I don't mean to put myself down, you know, but it's just a true observation. But it makes life interesting because they're sometimes too brilliant.
On Scenic Roots, this is Talking Writing. Our guest, Mark Anderson, is a poet, the current president of the Chattanooga Writers Guild. He's also host and organizer of the Songwriter Showcase competition twice a year in the Camp House. The competition was cancelled last year because of the pandemic, but this year they have figured out a way to put it online. One of the three judges for this year's competition is Chattanooga singer and songwriter Anthony Quails, who organized and hosted the Songwriter Showcase for several years himself. He's also won the competition several times. This is from a virtual show he played in the Woodsong series from Dalton this past summer.
A lot of my friends that are songwriters are writing a lot of songs right now during this quarantine. They have, a lot of them are full-time musicians, and I'm blessed. I have a job that pays my bills and outside of music. So I've been very, very blessed to be able to just work from home. And I'm actually in the room that I work from. So a few weeks ago, I got in the habit of every morning I look out this window back here, and it goes into my backyard, and there's some woods back there. And I sit in an office typically all day, and so I don't, you know, it has windows, but I don't get to see, you know, feel like I'm interacting with nature or anything like that. And I noticed a lot of birds and wildlife. And there's an actual chipmunk that lives back there, and I love watching him. He's funny, and I like to watch him kind of just scurry around and dig in the leaves. And it's funny because I watch these birds, and they're very territorial, and a lot of birds are really rude to each other. I mean, if you're in their area, they don't care. And it's just funny. So I wrote this. I started thinking about this idea of... if you've ever heard the term underrated miracles, because I think a lot of times we look for miracles as in like these big, at least for me, I do. I look for these big, pronounced physical things happening. And a lot of times there are so many underrated miracles, you know, the breath that we breathe every single day. And I started thinking about these birds, and there was a bluebird that was in the backyard one morning, and I was watching it, just watching him, and I ended up catching myself watching him for, you know, half an hour, just off and on, and he would dig in the leaves, and he would scoot around, and it was, and I'd hear him sing, and then he would fly off, and it was neat to watch that, and it was the first time I think I really noticed that in a long time. And I started thinking about all the things that I'm surrounded by every day that are underrated miracles. So I wrote this song. Hope you guys enjoy it. There's a bluebird in the backyard. I'm watching through the window screen. I hear him singing in the morning while shuffling through the fallen leaves. And as he takes off toward the sky, it's like nothing that I've ever seen. And I think, slow down everything, or you'll miss everything if you look and listen before they come and go. You'll see the greatest underrated miracles. I took a trip down to the river just before the sun set low. Dipped my toe into the water and watched the tiny ripples grow. What I truly failed to see was the universe that lied below. But now I know to slow down everything, or you'll miss everything if you look and listen before they come and go. You'll see the greatest underrated miracles, like how the seasons always change. None are ever quite the same. And I'm reminded every day when I see my daughter's face. And listen before they come and go. You'll see the greatest underrated miracles.
At the same time that you are president of the Writers Guild, and so you focus on writers and poets, you also focus on songwriters, and you have been presenting a kind of showcase competition for songwriters at the campus. And you did that for, I think you were the one organizing that for at least a couple of years, weren't you?
Since 2018. Yeah, it's been around with us.
Long before that, I know.
Yeah, Anthony Quayles managed it for a couple of years. Noah Collins was, I think, the original organizer. But it was part of the Camp House, their policy of being community involved and the arts. So we did this competition that would be a series of 8 people every month would compete, and we would have 2 winners. But we didn't do one at all in 2020. The last one was December 2019. We were planning to do one, which COVID has shut that down.
Well, because the whole thing was sort of predicated, at least in part anyway, on an audience response, wasn't it?
It was all about that.
So that doesn't really, can't really work that way.
And there's no way to... There's no way that that can be replaced.
Mm.
But I've had a lot of time during my COVID isolation to sit around and think about stuff. And I thought, well, the NPR has a great Tiny Desk Concert competition. I was like, well, we can do that. So I've gone online and created a website called Chat Town Stages. The address of that is chattown.com. A-R-T, chattown.art. There's 2 T's, chattown.art. And we've set up our first competition to be the songwriter stage, and it's you, the contestants fill out a profile. They'll have a nice profile with pictures, a short bio, and a link to their website where people can buy their music or whatever their professional website is. Then they submit also a link to their performance of their song. It has to be an original song, them performing it. We're just doing solo singer-songwriter, very traditional. So then the judges, we're going to have three elimination rounds. We're accepting applications, entries, until February 20th. It's a $10 entry fee. Then we have a round of eliminations where we'll eliminate half of the people and are saying it positively that if half of them progress to the next elimination round. Anyway, and then another round of judging, and then the finale on March 27th.
And what exactly will the finale be? Is that going to be online also?
Working with Stratton Tingle at Soundcore to possibly, we're not sure yet, but hopefully more than just announcing the winners, we'll do some sort of a live streaming event. Currently, we have three great judges, Anthony Quayles, Denise Adeniyi, and Stratton Tingle. So they're very good judges. Anthony has won this contest many times, and Denise has a world of musical experience, multiple degrees in music, and then Stratton, of course, is the local music hub meister, manager, director of Soundcore. But then we have the audience vote, too. So the idea is that every entry contestant, they get all their friends to go on and vote for them, and it'll be just a simple Google form where you submit your email address and you get one vote per email address, and vote for your favorite person. We're starting out the award package with $200, but every $10 entry fee goes into the awards pool. So I think it's up to $240 right now, and hopefully it'll be several hundred by the time we get a lot more entries. I do need some sponsors. I would love to get some sponsors that offer merchandise to put into the awards package.
How do you do that? Do they get in touch with you personally?
Yeah, I go to the website, and there's an email address on there, and we'll work out an arrangement. They can support the artistic community, and our city is built on that spirit. And I love Chattanooga. I came here and fell in the midst of this artistic community. I always say Nashville has nothing on us. They got the quantity. They've got all kinds of people up there, but we've got some quality here that is just shouldn't be overlooked. And I'm proud, so excited. I've had a great time since I moved here a few years ago. And so that innovative, creative spirit, I hope this contest displays that kind of spirit. It's just like, well, we're shut down, but we can still do something online. And it takes this contributions from everyone to make these kinds of things happen. So I hope people will jump online and join that.
So again, if you are a singer and songwriter and you'd like to make a submission to the competition, the website for all the details is chattown, chattown.art. This is Scenic Roots on listener-supported public radio.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.